Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
Welcome to the Narbos and Broomheads podcast, where if you ever wondered how Degrassi would handle cocaine, then we've got the epic conclusion for you. Or at least a conclusion, or at least we've got part two of what it feels like to be a ghost. And what other addicts do we have on lurking on this podcast tonight? Let's check who see who's haunting the rock out east.
That'd be me. Hello, my name is Ted. What's up? We're not getting a hurricane. The bottom people of the problems, I think, they might get a little touch of a hurricane, but that's fine. That's not me or Linda. So, or Busquet, Sugar the Cat. So we good.
Which hurricane is it? Hurricane Lee? Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that's it. But I think it's more of a New Brunswick, Nova Scotia thing.
Yeah. Fuck them, right?
Yeah. Hey-o. They're in the Maritimes. Yeah, also, just a note for all you all, a public service announcement. The Maritimes does not include Newfoundland. If you say Atlantic, yes. Newfoundland in Maritimes, no. So, yeah.
I got an argument with someone at school over that, and they would not believe me to the point where I was like, I have a true account of this being correct.
But go stab him with a pencil. Take right between the ribs. No, let's have a peaceful place. Okay, let's go up to T.O. To the Big Smoke.
Hi, I'm Alan. Hi, everyone.
Settle down. Too much excitement.
You're on the down. You need another bum, another rail.
Yeah, I totally do. I'm down for my high. Anyways, it's Alan. Hi, I'm in Toronto. And how's it going? Let's pass it to New York.
New York. New York.
New York. I don't know. Hi.
This is Stacy down in New York. Yeah. And this is an interesting episode, right? Yeah. I'm also feeling like I'm down off a high right now. So I don't know. We'll see how we do. Let's send it out to where I have distant relatives in Saskatchewan, in Regina.
Ooh, you have distant relatives here?
I do.
I should look them up. We can become best buds.
They have a steakhouse, apparently.
Ooh, that narrows it down.
Yeah.
Not really, honestly. It's like all the Greeks own the restaurants in this. I think we've talked about this, actually. All of the Greeks own the restaurants in Regina. So, yeah.
Unfortunately,
Ukrainians and sausage.
Yeah, unfortunately, my immediate family, none of us own restaurants, which is really annoying. But yeah.
Well, it's Arlo here in Regina, Saskatchewan, and it's sporty times. There's a football game going on tonight. The kickoff is in like 10 minutes. And so it is a sea of green walking up my street because I'm right near
the Rough Riders. Exactly. Are playing the Rough Riders, everybody. It's going to be a big night.
Yeah, I don't know who they're playing. The Elks, I think. But we won the Labor Day Classic.
And then what happened?
Great. And then we shit the fucking bed on the Banjo Bowl.
Yeah, they won the Labor Day Classic by what, like 3 points? And then Winnipeg beat them like 56-10 in the Banjo Bowl.
Oh my God, yeah. Painful. Painful. But yeah, I don't follow the sports that much, but I do. It is the Labor Day Classic and the Banjo Bowl are always fun every year. And the Labor Day Classic is actually a really fun game to go to because the rivalry is like so violent.
For our American wow. listeners, there, of course, we're talking about the Canadian Football League, which if you have not ever seen Canadian football, you should find clips of it because you'll be like, I mean, it's football, but what the fuck is that? And what the fuck is that? And what the fuck is that?
Don't they get another chance? Why are they kicking on third down all the time?
Yeah. Why is the field like a soccer field? It's so fucking big. You mean you can get a point by missing a field goal? Yes. It's also a 9-team league. So there's that. Once upon a time, two of the teams were called the Rough Riders.
yes.
But the on Labor Day of every year, the season, of course, runs from June to November because winter in Canada, you can't really be playing football into early February like they do in the States. So the teams on Labor Day, it's like the main rivalries play each other. So Edmonton plays Calgary, Toronto plays Hamilton, and then Winnipeg plays Saskatchewan, which is the rivalry that, honestly, other than in Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, no one cares about. But it's a big one if you're in any of those two local markets. And I know as a Winnipegger, go Bombers, right? And
so, Bombers, yeah. Fuck you. Yeah. I've changed allegiance.
So they play the Labor Day game, which is the big one. But then the next week, all those teams play each other again, but in the other team's stadium. So the Labor Day Classic for the Bombers in Saskatchewan is always in Regina, and then the next week they play in Winnipeg, and that's called the Banjo Bowl because at one point in time, the kicker, the field goal kicker for the Bombers, said that everybody in Saskatchewan was sitting around strumming their banjos. So, and I guess
they called them a bunch of banjo picking hicks.
Yeah, like they,
is what he said, which is really unkind. I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, I mean,
you meant musicians.
Yeah, if it was me, it would have been called the "fuck your cousin" bowl. So he wasn't.
Okay, all right.
He wasn't that unkind. So just saying. Anyway,
it's just history.
Yeah.
So season 6, episode 10, "What It Feels Like to Be a Ghost," part 2, aired in Canada on January 2nd, 2007, so very early into the year 2007, and January 12th in the United States, so we've pretty much caught up in this season. Unfortunately, this was written by the OGs of Degrassi, Schuyler, Hood, and Moore, and, you know, it was directed by this Eleanor Lindo, and the direction is kind of strange in this episode. Like, to me, it feels like all of a sudden she gets lost in the fact that she thinks she's directing a music video at times, and it just doesn't really have the same, I don't know, feel as it usually does, but I guess we can discuss that later. If we're reviewing part one, I guess we could say best, Craig is back. He's on cocaine. Manny feels dumb because Ellie sees allegories. JT wants a school daycare because he thinks Mia is hot. Liberty disagrees, and then I guess that's the end of the storyline. And we got a dinner party for the ages. So does anybody want to have anything to say about part one before we jump into this epic conclusion?
We noted when we reviewed part one, the title, "What It's Like" or "What It Feels Like to Be a Ghost," is a Taking Back Sunday song. The band is going to make an appearance in this episode. They did not make an appearance in episode one.
We will meet them and we will hear another one of their songs that they play.
Yes.
As they go. So, all right. So we start the episode at the core at the paper. Ellie is sitting at the computer and really struggling to write her piece on the day in the life of Craig Manning. So Ellie's ideas for articles just keep getting better and better. we've never seen a day in the life. In person, it was a day in the life of a university student in dorm life, and then I think it was basically, you know, students and sexual health, and now it's the day in the life of Craig Manning.
That's
so
literally the title that she's got for the article. Yep. And I was like, Jesse calls her on it, and I was like, you can keep that title because then I'll know to skip the article if I'm reading the paper.
Plus, most of the people reading the paper are gonna be like, who the fuck is Craig Manning?
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. And I did mention, like, you know, we're kind of led to believe that he left for this amazing chance at rock stardom. But I get the feeling during this episode, I don't think he's really hit it the way he left.
He has money.
But he always had money. His dad was rich, and he inherited money. And
oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. Know.
Did we get the sense that he actually was being successful? Like, when he meets the band, we'll talk about a second, he's just super excited to sit on the stage with them.
Yeah, right. Like, if he were super successful, he wouldn't be staying with Marco and Ellie. He'd be staying at a hotel in downtown Toronto and spending a lot of money, right? You would think.
Just seems disjointed to me. But
I mean, so I will give them credit for this. I mean, at least he didn't go off and become the most fucking successful musician in the world.
Yes, I definitely
this is definitely more realistic for a change.
And maybe we're supposed to see this through Ellie's eyes, and she's got this, like, allure of the fact that he's, like, this superstar, when realistically he's just a struggling artist who's been signed to a label.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, just a side note, change your fucking name. Get a stage name. Craig Manning doesn't really like, oh my God, the ladies love me and the guys want to be me. Craig. It's like, come on.
You're absolutely right, though, Alan. I really appreciate, like, he's like the first person in Degrassi, the Next Generation history that isn't like, hasn't been successful.
Yeah.
What he's been doing.
Like wildly successful.
Yeah, wildly successful.
So Ellie mentions that she's struggling with the story more so because she's seen the cocaine that he's on, or that was in his room, but she believes it's only Manny's. But Jesse, you know, and actually somewhat of his knowledgeable way, and maybe, you know, one of his better kind of reasoning here, kind of reasons with her that it's either Craig's or Manny's, or they're at least sharing it with Tweedledee, because Ellie calls her Manny Tweedledum.
Yeah, and
Uncle Jesse, it's clearly the high school student.
Yeah,
it's not the Vancouver rock star who has mental problems.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in this conversation, Jesse calls her Frosh. She calls him Boss Man. Right. So hideous. Awesome. Also, the start of the writers continuing to gaslight us throughout this episode, because now they want us to believe that Jesse is a good guy who's been a dick. And
he does lots of dickhead things almost in this episode too. But at least he's right here. He's trying to say like you're being a moron.
I noted that he's given off strong R. Kelly vibes. So there you go.
Great.
Yeah. Sure. Excellent. Fantastic. Good. Awesome. Good job, show.
So as we know, Ellie can't see the truth in front of her eyes with Craig, so she just believes that Manny's a toxic influence. So to distract her, Jesse decides to give Ellie a chance to do a big review of the band Taking Back Sunday. So they're, you know, the band is making an appearance in this episode, we're led to believe at this point.
And just to solidify that this is a solid professional relationship and that these decisions are made for professional reasons. After she assigns this to, or after he assigns this to Ellie, they smooch and she thanks him. So,
as she's struggling to already write up about a musician.
Yes.
So,
right.
Give you another one about a real band now. You proved yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We get Craig showing up for his quote unquote interview, but he mentions to Ellie that he can't because he's got to go clean out Joey's garage. Ellie basically points out like, no, I can do both. I can interview you and we can go see the band. But Jesse insinuates that Craig's not very important. And Craig gives him a pretty good dirty look like, what the fuck, man? And then throws his sunglasses on. Basically covered out his coked out eyes.
He's just like, yeah, you don't have time for this Craig bullshit. Basically, and Craig's like, hey.
Well, I mean, if this is actually Jesse maybe being a little bit professional, though, where it's like.
No, I like it.
Like, again, there might be undertones of like, I don't like this fucker, Craig, and your crush on him. But in the grand scheme of things, if you're weighing Taking Back Sunday and Craig Manning.
Right.
You're in your paper, which one are you going to choose? I love how he gives Ellie the interview. She's like, thank you. Craig walks into the room. She's like, let's go to Joey's. And like 30 seconds after he's assigned her, Jesse's like, remember how I assigned you Taking Back Sunday?
Yeah.
So
remember how you have a real thing to do right now?
Yeah.
He is correct as an editor or whatnot. He is correct. Like, regardless of the romantic undertones.
Plus, he knows Craig is on coke.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be easier for Jesse to manage his employee in this situation if he wasn't fucking his employee. But,
yep.
So then we jump to Joey's garage, where Ellie is conducting her her interview with Craig, and she's asking about how his lyrics are always so seem to be preoccupied with home. So Craig answers that home is wherever your guitar is. And I struggled to type this because my finger was halfway down my throat. This is actually one of the last
times. She's asking him leading questions about home. Because she's like, aren't you happy to be home? Didn't you miss people here? Aren't all of your songs and all of your creative inspiration about people back home, such as myself?
Yeah, don't like me.
And he's just like, well, home is wherever your guitar is. Ugh.
And then she points out, your guitar is here.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So
then Ellie says, I am a guitar.
So... How is Joey, like, is this Joey figuratively selling the house? Because I thought Caitlin owns the house.
Exactly. Well, I wrote that down here.
Yeah, I said Caitlin will
answer questions.
Yeah, Caitlin will be happy because she's going to get the money back for the fucking house. So.
Right. Yeah.
Did we note that that he mentions that Joey is selling the house and moving to Calgary?
Yeah. The only
and
other.
Karen?
Well, I thought
the same thing.
The only other city that the writers know about in the Degrassi universe. There's Toronto and Calgary.
Like it. I think it's a callback. I think it was funny.
Well, Michelle's mom moved to Calgary, and Wheels is going to go to Calgary, and now fucking Joey has moved to Calgary. The only two places, everybody, in Canada.
The promised land.
Where did Tracker go when he left Sean?
Yeah,
North.
He went to Alberta because he went to the oil sands.
Also Alberta. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't say Calgary, but...
So there's a running joke in Canada when you're a big concert fan that they'll show a map of Canada and be like, here's the map of Canada for people who are touring, and it will only be Vancouver and Toronto on the map with everything else
sometimes
empty.
Sometimes Montreal.
Yes, and so in this case, it's the same joke except replace Vancouver with Alberta. So
so he also mentions that he's struggling that people moved on and weren't just waiting for him with open arms and a smile when he got back. Like, what did he think? Did he
that
think
they
that...
were, though.
They were.
Around with
they
hearts
had a party
in their
for
eyes,
him.
Being like, play us another acoustic song.
She was literally at the airport with open arms waiting for him.
Yeah.
Or sorry, Manny was. Pardon me, Manny was. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think they did more than they needed to.
Yeah.
Much more, yes.
But everyone's too busy for him, especially Ellie. And, you know, she mentions she checks her phone and she has to rush off to the interview for Taking Back Sunday. So she has a great idea that he needs to come with her and meet the band. So, okay, whatever, he probably. But you know what? She says this Taking Back Sunday. We've heard it twice. And he makes no known interest in knowing who this band is. Like, there's no reaction. Uh-huh. Let's just remember that, right? There's no reaction to him being asked about this. He doesn't care. Like, okay, I'll come. Whatever. It's a band. So we skip to outside. Now, I don't know if we're outside the school or, you know, walking somewhere. And I said, maybe it doesn't matter to this show anymore where people are. They're just outside.
I assumed that Taking Back Sunday was playing at the university. Like, it was one of those, like, university shows at the university bar or something. So this out into exterior shot was, like, an exterior shot of the university.
Oh, but before, though, we have a scene where Danny, Derek, and Toby are walking somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know where they're walking. Like, maybe they're at school. Maybe it doesn't matter, right? Who cares? It doesn't matter. But they're getting confronted by the Lakehurst tough guys. So we meet Nick again, who last time we saw him was wearing TJ's mascot head to the side of the head. And then we get introduced to good old Johnny DeMarco, and Johnny DeMarco is gonna wreak some havoc in this world in the next little bit.
Like, let's
and
not.
Clearly, the writers were looking around for a last name, and they were just like, Melissa DeMarco. Yeah.
And Johnny DeMarco, just do not forget what the fuck Johnny DeMarco gets up to in the next two episodes, and then I'm supposed to believe for fucking seasons going on from here. Like, I could give a fuck about this asshole.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's still allowed to be at school.
Yeah.
Right. Please. Ugh.
Now, are we a little surprised that Toby hangs out with Danny and Derek? Because, I mean, Danny and Derek are supposed to be younger than Toby, but...
Well, Danny is the younger brother of his fucking ex who he knocked up. Like, if anything, why is Danny hanging out with JT?
Well, yeah, but they're not hanging out together yet. But you're right. Like, why does Danny want to hang out with them, right? These guys,
I assumed that Toby was hanging out with Danny through Liberty, because it seems like Toby's hanging out a lot with Liberty lately.
I think Toby's a nerd and doesn't have any other friends.
Yes, correct.
Well, yes, the one friend he did have tried to shoot up the school and then got shot.
Right, the one time he tried to branch out to someone older.
Yes, correct.
Hmm. The boys, the tough guys, say that Lakehurst has declared war on Degrassi, and they're going to stomp JT's ass.
My note for that was, ooh, with about seven O's.
So these Lakehurst guys, like, I don't know what the casting call, but they're like, let's pick the main bully. He had to have hit puberty maybe 2 weeks ago and put him in. He's the mean dude. And it's like, because he's kind of like just getting used to his body. Like, and I'm totally making fun of a kid here, but I'm sure he's grown up by now. But he's just so gangly. I'm like, I'm tough. Yeah.
He was in another show, right? Because I think he was in something else, and I don't know. It's Canadian.
Oh, we talked about him a couple episodes ago. He's made quite a career for himself.
He's an Oppenheimer.
Really?
I think he was in The 100 was one that he was in a lot of episodes about or whatever.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, and he was just in Oppenheimer as well, which is like huge, right?
Yeah.
There's garbage men at the top of the hill who are like, hey, what's going on down there?
Is that what it was, a garbage man?
Yeah, it's credited as Garbage Man, and the guy who plays Garbage Man, I mean, he doesn't have a very prolific career. He only has a few IMDb credits, but he has a great name.
Ooh, lay it on us.
His name is Izzy Korn.
Yes.
Izzy Korn, is he not?
I don't know.
They're fantastic.
Yeah, Korn spelled the same way as all your favorite band, everybody. Korn.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow, Lord. Amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, so we move to the club. I think I agree with Arlo. This is probably the on-campus club.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, again, if this is such a big band, I'm a little surprised they're playing at just the on-campus little club. But all right, I mean,
I guess Drew, so. Drew was saying, my husband was saying that, like, this is way too small a venue.
I would have thought so.
Absolutely.
At this time in their career. And I was like, okay. So. Like, again, I kind of missed this whole scenario. I was just, you know, the wrong age or into the wrong music or whatever. But it didn't, this band did not register for me. So I wouldn't have known. But
yeah, like,
according to him, like, they would have been playing a bigger event than this.
Yeah. And not just during like midweek of a, you know, middle of the semester. Like we had, when I was at university, when they did our O week, I think at the time, who was it played? I think it was Everclear played, and they were pretty big at the time. But that was like on a big stage outside with all of the frosh. Like it was not some little venue where you're going to have a few people buying some drinks and...
Well,
I mean, at least it's University of Toronto and not like University of Regina.
Yeah, well, for some perspective, I've just gone to setlist.fm and looked up Taking Back Sunday gigs from 2007 to see where they played. They played at places like the Metro in Chicago, which is a pretty prominent, like not an arena, but a pretty prominent club. The Verizon Wireless Music Center in Indianapolis.
That sounds big.
The Fillmore in Philadelphia, which is a pretty big club. Yeah. I would assume you would, maybe Stacy, you would know a little bit about that place. I don't know. The Molson Amphitheater in Toronto, Ontario. Ooh. A 12,000 seat venue is where they played.
I wonder. I bet it was the same time. I bet you they played the amphitheater the same time they were on this show.
Yeah,
probably why they made it work out, I bet.
Yeah, so they're playing in big venues, not at the school campus bar.
The spoke at Western.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point in their careers, like, obviously, you know, they're not above it. Like, they just played on someone's back deck, as per Stacy's anecdote in the last episode.
Yes.
But, at this point in their career, they're quite a bit bigger than this. Yeah.
So Ellie starts by being introduced to Adam, who I think is the lead singer of the band. Later,
Adam Lazara,
Yeah, I don't know if that was his real name. I didn't look it up. Thank you, Arlo.
Apparently, over the years, they've had kind of like other, like they have secondary lead singers and stuff like that. Like, apparently, Adam Lazara doesn't sing lead on all of their songs.
Okay.
But I'm not knowledgeable enough to know the extent of it. But that is according to Drew.
And then Adam introduces the rest of the band. There's Fred, Mark, Ed, and Matt. I don't know if that's the real names, but that's who they went with, so I would assume so.
They are the real names.
Yeah, Adam says that the editors, so Uncle Jesse, has been raving about Ellie and said that she's the best writer, to which Jesse wants to make sure he said, no. I would never say something so positive about my girlfriend. What I said was she's not the worst writer we have.
Uh-huh.
Why would you say that to someone in the first place?
He's a douche.
like a douche in front of her, but also to the person that's like, this is a big get for him to get this story. And he's like, yeah, I assigned you not the shittiest writer. And he's correcting him. Like,
yeah,
come on, dude.
Yeah. Like, nice.
So Craig kind of sees what's going on. He's ready to leave. He says he wants to go talk to him and see what Manny's doing. But Ellie's not going to let that happen. So he keeps her, keeps him around and talks up his skills that he's a local singer songwriter extraordinaire.
I mean, Jesse tells Craig to take a hike, and then Ellie makes a point of introducing Craig to the band. Yeah.
Well, and Jesse is pissed.
Yeah.
Pissed. Now we're, yeah. And I specifically said out loud, I was like, oof, if looks could kill. And then Drew said, Taking Back Sunday does have a song called If Looks Could Kill. I thought you were making a reference. And I was like, oh, I wasn't. But here we go.
So remember when we said that Craig has made no interest in this Taking Back Sunday, didn't care that he was going to meet them, didn't ask to go meet them, even though, you know, like, he all of a sudden says that Make Damn Sure is one of his favorite songs. And he sings a stripped down acoustic version of this song in his set.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden,
you know what you get as a band member, as like the original writer of that song? Oh, I do a stripped down acoustic version. You would get a slight smile and polite nodding.
Yes.
They wouldn't be like, whoa, dude,
I can't wait to hear
it. I love it.
You'd dude, like, play it for great. Me, man.
Great. You just keep it up, man. Like, you know, keep playing music, and as he's backing away from the guy, well, look, backing away from Craig, that's how it would have went down.
If Craig peering into the head.
Right.
If Craig was a known musician in the community, then perhaps they'd be like, oh, we want to hear the Craig Manning version. Cool. But Craig is a nobody. So, right. Yeah. So to Taking Back Sunday, it may as well be me being like, oh, yeah, I do that. Yeah.
Saying Alan, I do a wicked karaoke version of your song.
I'm going to play it.
So as we said, they want him to play for it. Jesse's pushing the deadline, but Ellie fires back and says, well, no, we got time. Let him play. It's his chance to play. I did forget to mention earlier, though, I just saw on my notes here that when they mention about going to Jesse or Joey's garage, it's the last time Joey's name is mentioned, apparently, on Degrassi The Next Generation. So the fact that he's moving, it's the last time they bring up his name. So.
Hardly knew you.
Little shed a little tear, snort a little coke for him.
It will not be the last time that we see Caitlin, and Jesse might be involved. So.
Oh my god.
I forgot about that.
So anyways,
I did not know about that, and I'm like, are you fucking serious right now?
Well, they are the same age, right? So
Oh my god.
That's right.
All
right.
Yeah.
So we get Craig's going to go play with the band. Ellie's like just in La La Land because her true love here is getting a chance to, you know, reach his goals, and Jesse is just staring and just pissed off.
Well, and again, Ellie, who is, her whole life is journalism, right? Like, that's why she's gone to university. Yeah. That's her identity. Everything about her is getting journalism right. But the power of Craig's cock, like, blinds everything. So she's like, I don't care if it fucks up, like, a big assignment here. Craig's dick is playing a song. So.
I said in my notes, right, I don't blame Jesse for being pissed off. Ooh. Ellie is acting like a dipshit.
Yeah.
Well, she really is. It's just, again, how do you sit there and be like, oh god, I gotta do this, I have to do this, oh god, I'm gonna
and
that's
again,
why I could never act, because I'd be one of those assholes and be like, no, I'm not playing it like this, nope, you gotta write something different, nope, not doing it.
Uncle Jesse in these scenes does a good job. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, yes. I mean, he's way too old, miscast, like all that stuff or whatever, but like, he, this, like, the seething annoyance.
Yeah.
He does a good job of it.
But the whole problem here is that you've got a professional situation that needs to be handled, but
Absolutely. He's
fucking the employee. So what can he do?
So we move on to our B plot for this episode.
Uh-huh.
We don't really follow on. We're not the B plot where we're wondering about what happens to the daycare that's being built at Degrassi, but no. Our new B plot, which is centered again around JT and his budding relationship with Mia. So they're goofing around like young sweethearts. And then Toby, Derek, and Danny sit down. And Toby mentions that he hopes JT is enjoying that burrito because it's going to be his last. To which JT wonders if they're taking it off the menu. Then nope. Toby says that Lakehurst is going to take him off the menu. Foreshadowing.
Licorice Crew.
Maybe they might.
The menu, but he adds the menu of life.
No, sorry, that's the menu of life. Sorry, you're right. Foreshadowing.
Well, and then Toby proceeds to blame Mia.
Right, because it's always the girl's fault
for all of the potential violence, because clearly it's Mia's fault.
Yes. Helen of Troy.
Because JT assumes that the anger is due to this brawl that they had in the gym, but Mia pipes up and she's like, well, it's also because Nick is the jealous type. And Toby says, oh, this is about you. You're going to get us all killed.
Evil woman.
And again,
well, listen, I cast the reaction that Toby might have. Like, listen, I'm going to get killed because you are goofing around with my buddy.
Yeah.
Come
on. And again, not Toby saying it to Mia, writers saying it to the audience. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bitches will get you killed. Yep.
Yeah. They're so devious and conniving. Ugh.
Well, she shouldn't have been so slutty. Look at her. She has a kid. Then she dated this guy. Do we even know if this guy's the baby daddy? We don't know. She's such a slut. Mm-hmm. She's going to get everyone killed.
She will. Everybody on the show. Mia's going to get killed.
And then maybe the most unrealistic part of this starts here, where JT's talking about how he's going to handle the situation, and later we're going to get like Toby and Derek and Danny involved in this. And I'm like, I know you made the joke earlier about the Lakers kid looking prepubescent. Those kids would kick the fucking shit out of the Grassy crew. Like,
well, and they do.
Yes. Yeah.
You know when like Super Dave would get like a wrecking ball dropped on his head, and all he would be like a helmet and a head and shoes and boots? That's what these Lakehurst kids would do to Toby and friends.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, when did JT get so aggro?
I'm not
like aggressive. Like he's.
He explains why JT. Later. He's a man.
I guess so. But like JT's never been like the. No, like super aggressive violent type. Like it's strange in this episode. They just make him so like aggressive about everything.
Yeah, getting to finger bang a meatball sub changes a man. So
that's true. The spicy sauce.
Yeah.
So. All right. Fair enough.
Alan puts up his hand and goes, truth. I feel the truth.
So what happens when you stop eating oatmeal?
I mean, the kids in the last episode of the dinner party were doing some philosophy. Well, I just fucking dropped my lessons on all of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, JT says he's going to handle it, and the scene cuts back to the on-campus club where Ellie's interviewing some of the band, but doesn't have time to interview all of them, and Jesse is pissed that she wasted time, and rightfully so. Like, her job was to interview the band, not to get Craig a chance to play with them. And as I said, shockingly, in pure Degrassi style, Craig is asked to sit in and sing with the band.
Of course.
He plays his stripped-down acoustic version of their hit, and they're like, oh my God.
Which, as we'll see, fits perfectly with the vibe of the band.
You know what our audience would like?
Yeah, acoustic.
Our audience who came to see us, they could either hear the full band play the song that we wrote, or we could bring you an unknown dipshit up with a guitar to play it
Some
for them.
Some gangly nerd.
Like, what? Like, that's like, you know, there's already a step down when the band goes up to play their song and they just stick their mic out at the audience to sing it the whole time instead of them doing it themselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is like so many pegs below that. I'd be pissed.
Like a miracle wish for Craig to get up there. He's a dying child and they're giving him his last wish.
Also, the fucking writers, again, it's like, do you know how concerts work? Because... You know, there are bands that are big enough that they're going to play the whole show and they're going to do an intermission, right? Like, if you went to see Elton John, who actually didn't do an intermission, you'll just play for fucking 4 hours. But but a lot of big bands will be the only act, and so they'll play and then they'll take 15 minutes off and then do another set. But Taking Back Sunday is not like, yeah, we'll play half the set, then we'll take a break, and then we'll do the rest. There'll be an opener.
I could see that they're doing two sets. Sure.
Absolutely not.
You
not in a place like that, they wouldn't. Maybe if they were actually really doing it at the amphitheater.
You paid ticket money to be here. You know what you can get for that ticket money? Also a free open mic right in between. And we got this gangly nerd that we're going to bring up on stage. Hit it, nerd. Like, you go, what the fuck? Like, oh, well, I'm going to take a leak anyway and go and get a $22 beer like while this doofus plays. I guess so. Whatever.
Now we're bringing up Craig Banning.
Make
so
Shannon.
Craig is super excited because this could be huge for his career, which I don't know, maybe it could be, sure, but I would think myself, maybe his career isn't where we're led to believe it is, if just sitting in along with this band in a university pub is really going to change his career.
I can see
he wants to run off and tell Manny.
I can see the YouTube post of it now. Asshole ruined show.
Look at his douchebag.
Fame.
All the YouTube comments are like, kill yourself.
Guess what? I can do an acoustic version of a song too. So we get a cut to Ellie, and you kind of get the sense that she's realizing that maybe she's always second fiddle to Craig. Mm. And then here we go, Alan, as you were alluding to earlier, we take a trip to Lakehurst, which is our new, which is looks just like Degrassi, but maybe just a little darker. Nick is getting out of detention, and if you weren't sure, we knew that because there was a sign that looks like my son, who is 7, made it, that says, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Detention. His whole posse is waiting for him, which, sure, I don't think any of those boys would really say, you know what I'm going to do? Wait for an hour.
Yeah, like, you're basically...
Meet me up later somewhere else.
You're giving yourself
or
detention, too.
Or they'd all
too.
Be in detention with yeah.
They would be in detention
well,
together.
They may as well be
also,
if they're going to fucking wait.
You're not allowed to wait in the hall at school. Oh. Like, you get kicked out.
Yeah.
You totally get kicked out. Also, JT, fucking clairvoyant, is like, I know exactly where these people are right now.
Oh, funny enough, my computer is auto-correcting Lakehurst for some reason to Lakehurt. So, there we go. I'll tell him to a fight there, I guess.
Yeah, very apt.
So, as we mentioned, JT just shows up to a completely Lakehurst all by himself and calls out Dem Skeets. You're welcome, Teddy. Mm-hmm. And says, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Please stop. Nick says he doesn't care about Mia and that she's a slut. And I give JT credit. He does step to him. He does not like that he calls Mia a slut. And I say it's pretty ballsy with 4 guys flanking him to step to the head honcho of this posse. Mm. JC says, bring the band to the tunnel tomorrow because he's bringing the thunder and lightning. Jesus. And I wrote, maybe the chess club.
I mean,
so they plan to have a big fight.
So,
big brawl.
In case you didn't know, and I'm very sorry if I spoil it for you, JT's going to die in the next episode.
What?
And, like, why isn't he dead here? Like, why isn't he fucking dead right now?
Because he's asking for it.
They just jump like, him right there.
Yeah.
He's going to this school. Like, what? It makes no sense. It's just like...
I don't... No, maybe it's because I'm, like, female, or maybe it's like, why do men make plans to fight?
Like, you know,
why don't you just fight?
When I was in like grade 5, maybe these students are in what, grade 12 or 12th grade? Sorry, Stacy. they're in their final year of high school, right?
Sure.
This did not happen. Like the last time I remember, I don't know about you all, but the last time I remember like fights happening was maybe grade 9. Maybe, but like grade 12, it's like, no, you've got a job probably, and you're going to school next year. You've got better things to do than like, I'm going to meet you at 5:00. Like, it's just silly. It's totally silly and foolish.
Actually, the Lakehurst kids aren't in grade 12 because Mia is younger than JT, and so is Johnny DeMarco because they're going to be on the show.
They hang around.
Who's the main
they
kid?
Hang around.
Johnny DeMarco. Like, he's in like grade 6. Like JT could get a lot of trouble for hitting that kid. So don't do it.
Episode bounces back to the newspaper office. Ellie is apologizing to Jesse for not being professional and bringing Craig. Jesse says you're right, but he's more calling
out
the coke use.
Being late, insisting that Craig play a song, not being able to finish the interview because of all of these things.
Did you notice the transition shot? Every time they show the core, that girl is massaging that guy's neck. And I think she's been massaging his neck for at least 5 or 6 episodes at this point.
I like that. That's great. That's a great weird detail.
University is no joke. It's very stressful.
Yeah. So Jesse starts calling out Craig's coke use because he sees the symptoms. His best friend was a user. But Ellie and him continue to argue over who was more blind to Craig. Ellie says he's jealous. Jesse says, why would he be jealous of a failed singer-songwriter loser she's still crushing on?
Ooh.
Ellie says that's wrong on so many levels.
Nope.
No, well, he's right.
He is a singer-songwriter, so maybe that's is one.
Is this the part where he says, like, Craig keeps crapping on you and you keep going back for more?
Just wait, here we go.
It's like, I figured the next line would be, well, I crap on you little bit less, but not as much as Craig, but it's still a big load of crap. So, yeah.
So I don't know.
I think there's a lot of punch holes in Uncle Jesse's apartment walls, I would say. I have a funny feeling.
Well, right. As you said, Jesse points out that what's really wrong is Craig keeps crapping on Ellie and she keeps going back to him. I said, like, do the writers not see, like, are they doing this on purpose?
Yes.
Or do they not realize that this is the exact same thing?
Yeah, like, they...
I don't know.
I say yes. Like, they wrote it on purpose, clearly. But they, I truly believe that their intention is, we're supposed to forget that Jesse is an asshole.
Right.
Jesse does the same thing.
Jesse's just a victim. And so in saying this line, like, Ellie should have immediately been like, that's you. Like, that's what you do, Jesse, but it's not said, which leads me to believe again that we're all supposed to forget how Jesse treats her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the show bounces to Marco's Victorian house in downtown Toronto, where Craig seems to have moved in because it looks like he's living in this room right now, not just maybe sleeping there. And he's making out with Manny and they stop. And then Craig decides he wants to rip out the blow and do a line.
Amazing.
Instead of going with Manny somewhere.
Manny wants to go for dinner and a movie. And Craig's like, let's do cocaine instead. And just starts fucking making lines.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Manny admits that she didn't like the way it made her feel last time. So, okay, maybe that leads to your talk there, Arlo, about maybe they did some stuff and maybe it doesn't hit women the same way. I don't know.
Oh, she liked the way it made her feel. Look at her. Fuck. The fucking dinner party. She's like laughing her head off.
But you know what?
She's talking about the shame afterwards. She's like, I can't be a drug user. Drugs are bad. That's what she's talking about.
Yeah, I guess so. But Craig's super stoked because that's more for him and because he's awesome and coke is awesome. So double awesome. He says it's been the best 1 or 2 days of his life and she shouldn't be harshing his buzz.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was funny line.
I laughed.
She's like, guess what? I'm going to harsh your buzz even harder.
Yeah.
Well, even better, she dumps him and leaves. Craig very briefly makes a sad face and then dives right back into the fucking coke.
And dives headfirst into his pile of cocaine.
It's like, yes. He's like, you're my girlfriend now, cocaine.
Guess who daddy's going to love?
Like Scrooge McDuck diving into the coins. Yeah. He was diving into the cocaine right after she left.
Oh, yeah. When I leave in the morning, I'll throw out cat treats on the floor on the kitchen floor for the cat. And Linda will snarf into him so hard. And basically, Craig was Linda in this episode. Snarf, 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 snarf. Mm, I love it. It's so good.
So Manny is rushing out of the house as Ellie is down at the bottom of the steps. And she tells Ellie that she'll be happy because they broke up over his drug use. And Ellie said, no, that's your drugs. And Manny's like, come on. I'm fucking in high school.
Yeah.
And Ellie then looks dumb as fuck. Like, Ellie looks so dumb. Like, you're so stupid. So Ellie says, you know what? You're right, Manny. And she goes up to confront Craig, who's completely strung out. He's like smiling, strumming away on his bed like he is back on that ferry in Vancouver. He admits that he started while he was in Vancouver, but he's not an addict, to which Ellie says, what did she say? Sorry, I forgot to write it down. Something like addict.
She talked about her mom being an alcoholic. Like, he's going through the cliches. I'm not an addict. I can stop.
He can stop anytime.
Yeah. Her mom, who's an, you know, Ellie's mom is an alcoholic, so she spots all the cliches. Now.
Now she does.
Like, yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, I've been through this. So, you know, she's been wised up.
So in her world, she says, okay, you remember group therapy? You should come to group therapy. And he says he'll go if she promises to stop being mad at him, to which she sort of, I guess, hints at, yes, I will. And then I wrote, he just falls back into his snow haze.
Yeah, he bops to the song because he's high.
Because he's fucking lost in La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we jump to Degrassi, where the boys are handing out pamphlets for the Rumble Lakers ass kicking at 5.
They made a flyer. They made a flyer for the fight.
They made a
flyer.
They made a flyer for the fight. They're standing in the foyer.
Advertising
it to everybody in the school. Not a single fucking authority figure gives a shit. They're like, let the kids fight. If one of them dies, fuck it.
Five or six less of these kids anyway.
Yeah.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
And so JT like comes Toronto. In pissed.
You know how many kids there are? So many kids.
Yeah.
And they all go to this or the other school. Yeah, there's only two schools.
So JT's pissed their advertising until they remind him that they need to form a posse, to which he says, oh, yeah, good point. And then what I think is maybe second worst scene of this episode compared to maybe the dinner scene, Drake and Spinner enter to give them a legit PSA.
Yeah.
Like, it is legit. Like, they were reading. Like, they got in trouble in real life and had to say something on the episode to tell
kids. Well, fucking Toby, the fucking narc. Clearly has gone to the basketball coach and been like, coach, there's some bad stuff going down. And Jimmy's like, let me handle this, kid.
Listen, guys, drugs are bad. Nobody wins with violence.
Take it from me.
The person who's too old to be in the school but got stuck for a year.
And me, who tried to burn the school down.
No.
I know, of all people.
No. And got this guy shot here.
Yeah.
Spinner says they're being stupid. I said in my notes, Spinner says they're being stupid. And if anyone knows about being stupid, it's Spinner Mason.
Yeah, Spinner's like, there was a cycle of violence in the school, and I put motherfucker here in this chair.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I know stupid.
Yeah. And, I mean, so Drake, it's like, okay, if Toby is somehow going to get in trouble because of this, and he's associated with Ashley, then you take the path back to Drake. Okay, right? Like, we can shoehorn the giving a shit of Drake kind of there. Spinner? Spinner's like, motherfucker, we got a store with t-shirts and we're rich. Like, why would I care about any of this? Yeah.
But what about JT asking them if they want to come? Like, what has a guy in Jimmy's line? Yeah, I'll roll over their feet with my chair. What is a guy in a wheelchair going to do, JT, you dumbass? Like, what are the writers thinking even having him utter? Well, they had him utter that line just so Drake could deliver the, I'll roll over their feet with my chair line. Like, come on. Oh, God, it's so bad.
This was like if I had a project for my grade 9 class to write a PSA on drug use, or not drug use, on violence. And this would be somehow stilted writing they would come up with.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, it's so bad.
You think
so? Then Danny calls Drake bootalicious and to step off because they're going to kick some ass. Thought that was pretty funny.
That was actually
got some good giggle out of that.
I mean, again, the funniest part of this is like Derek and Daniel all of a sudden are like, we're going to do some ass kicking. Like, you're going to die. Like, you two are dead.
Yeah.
How on earth do these fucking nerds think that they're all of a sudden? Like, and I think, again, I think that the writers want us to assume that these kids are actually, like, tough and stand a chance here.
Yeah.
Like, if they go to this Rumble, it's going to be some sort of, like, fair fight. And it's like, you're all dead. Like, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, just throw a fucking Hadouken at them. Like, it's fine. Just down, forward, A, B, or X square.
This is like when The Undertaker would wrestle someone named, like, John Stone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're jobbers. And
balding guy.
And we've never had anything with Derek and Danny other than they're a couple little goofballs, right?
Right.
There's been nothing to show that these kids are tough or anything like that. In fact, the only people that they've bullied are women, so...
Yeah, and they're the kids in a grade that are really, like, feel like the youngest in the grade.
Yeah.
Like, they were literally at a school dance chasing each other around. Like, that's what the immature kids do at, like, say, a teen dance or a preteen dance even. Other kids are, like, interested, you know, in whatever, dancing and stuff. And there's kids running around, and that's these two.
It's like when Scooter and Tesla were playing tag when the school was burning down. So we get Toby agreeing with the morality police. He mentions that JT is being weird, but JT's pissed Toby's not backing him up. And we'll find out that Toby doesn't back him up. He doesn't never shows up at the fight or the supposed fight. So we get a quick scene at group therapy. Ellie is trying to get the leader of the therapy group to wait a little bit. But he says, no, we got to start. So Craig shows up a little bit late, decides not to go through the door. He's kind of tweaking a little bit. And then we get a little callback in this quick to Ellie starting to slap her wrist or snap her wrist with her elastic band, which we know is what she does to deal with her anxiety instead of cut herself. So a little callback to that. But it's kind of like just a scene to know
she
that
she Craig doesn't have neuroses, though, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
that Craig
no
can't follow through.
Also, I don't think you'd allow this in group counseling. Just because it's kind of triggering to other people. And it's kind of like, even though it's an elastic band, it's not cutting, but it's kind of like you're seeing hurt, like you're seeing violence. Yeah, anyway, it's just throwing that out there, but whatever. Yeah,
you would know.
The psychiatry expert.
No, it's all good. It's just like, and also another thing that I had the same problem years ago was like, or whenever the hell we started this program, it feels like years ago. Also, like, they're just throwing everybody in there. Like, yeah. If you have any type of mental health condition, like, everybody gets thrown in the same room. It's like, no. That's dicey at best, you know? It's like, I guess, but whatevs. Show got a show.
Well, quote, Ted, there's not enough people with mental health problems to necessitate several different sessions.
No, Arlo, yeah, there's only one group therapy session in all of Toronto.
There's only one in all of Toronto. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so we move to the tunnel, and it's fight night, fight time, fight afternoon, I guess I should say. But instead of the Lakehurst guys showing up right away, we get Mia, who gets them to leave instead of fighting. She tells JT, not only is this incredibly stupid, and you'll get your ass kicked, but also immature. And JT's answer is, I'm being a man.
Mia,
this
who,
is how men handle things.
Mia, who I guess hasn't seen JT all fucking day to say this, like, it's well, only at this moment. She's finally caught up to him at the tunnel at this point in time and not before.
JT, I've been trying to talk to you about your toxic masculinity all day.
That
you
is
delivered that line
on.
Just like she would have.
That is spot on. That
amazing.
Is the best impression. Uh-huh. I was like, is Mia on this fucking podcast? Awesome. I have so many questions.
So I guess they listen to reason. And they disband, as I wrote, under ordinance of sexy girlfriend.
Yes.
But we get a quick cut to Toby walking home, which I feel is kind of late. Like, he's walking home from school after 5 o'clock, or it's got to be much later than 5 o'clock, because the Lakehurst boys would have went to the tunnel, saw that the Degrassi posse wasn't there, decided to walk back to Degrassi and hope to confront them.
I wouldn't put past Toby doing something like lame in computer lab, though.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
But again, he is right outside of Degrassi, right?
Yeah.
Like, and in broad daylight. On a,
also, the Lakehurst guys wouldn't have known that he was doing lame stuff in the computer lab, right?
Yeah.
True. Yes. So he gets the ever-loving shit kicked out of him. Because, literally, they're kicking him because the boys didn't show up at the tunnel. So they're going to take out their aggression on Toby.
Well, fucking Toby, I guess you should have showed up at the tunnel. You wouldn't have gotten your ass kicked.
True.
Yeah.
Karma.
And again, for future seasons, remember Johnny DeMarco right there in this assault. So do not forget.
There's strike number one.
Yeah.
Okay, so we jump now to the club, where this is where I feel like the directing gets a little strange, because we have Taking Back Sunday singing their song, Make Damn Sure, which, by the way, has 35 million views on YouTube. So maybe 34.5 million of those are Drew, because he really likes Taking Back Sunday. I don't know.
Apparently, it's their most popular song. I, again, totally sleeping on it. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. As I said, this sounds kind of like every other band like this that I remember hearing in the early 2000s. But whatever. I guess it's a song that kind of slaps a little bit, I guess. But the filming is like they're moving around like a music video. It just looks like a completely different show. Like, they're just spinning around and...
Well, it's a...
I mean, I guess when you have like a famous band on your show, you have to like make the most
I guess.
Of it, right?
Yeah, like sure. It's... Yeah. I mean, I was just happy because it was a minute of time where I didn't have to take notes and concentrate.
True.
<Yeah. laughs>
Yes.
Although my note was, Taking Back Sunday is singing yay, I guess.
Yeah, like, I wrote, there's lots of positive comments under the YouTube clip, so I guess they're good.
I mean, they're fine. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with them. It's not, you know, it's not my jam, but they're fine. They're fine.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Kind of it's not terrible.
So Ellie is looking concerned because she can't find Craig. She goes backstage, shows a pass, I guess she has, because she works for the university paper, the fourth biggest paper, third biggest paper in Toronto or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Stacy,
I could hear Stacy's air quotes from here in another country when you said journalist. I was like, I could hear your fingers going in the air. Yeah.
You know,
she
me
goes
so well.
Backstage. She finds Craig's stash. She says he needs to stop it now or she's going to call Joey and everything goes away.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Because Craig is an adult.
Right.
Yeah, like technically he is. He's over 18.
Yeah, he's an adult. So his daddy can't stop it all. Like he's got the money. He's been living on his own. And so what's Joey going to do? Joey's in Calgary fucking Karen now.
Yeah,
so.
He's got Karen with him now. Bigger concerns.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't get that part.
No.
Ellie says she can't stop helping him and he knows why. Then we get a pretty shitty scene. Ugh. They start to make out. They say they love each other, but really we're just getting Craig manipulating her to get her to be quiet about the coke. He says, "Don't make me stop. I need it." And then right then there, you literally see Ellie's soul break.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
she's finally realizing that he's a piece of shit. He's a manipulator. She calls him a bastard, calls out his shit. And I must say, she does a pretty good job acting with the back end of this episode.
I mean, maybe I'm the heartless one here, but I laughed during this scene. Like,
did you really?
But yes, I wrote LOL. So here's what I wrote. So he asks, you know, she finds the coke. He says, you know, leave me alone. She says, I can't. He asks why. She says, you know why? Don't make me say it. So then he kisses her. And then in all caps, I wrote, LOL. Then he says, I love you. And she says, I love you too. Because it's so fucking absurd. Like,
true.
It's so absurd how we all of a sudden escalate to this point. That, and again, like, Ellie is so, like, awestruck by Craig's cock and, like, crazy about him that she's just going to believe any shit that comes out of his mouth after he's been a fucking lying douche for this whole episode. Mm-hmm. And Craig, just the fact that he would resort to that to just get through the night of doing cocaine, like, come on. And then they kiss again, and then he immediately says, and I wrote this in all caps, "So don't make me stop." It's like... I feel like we just, like, set off an atomic bomb and didn't set up for it at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty true to this show now, though.
Like, Craig has not, like, at least throughout this episode, you could have had Craig. Craig has never pulled the, but you are in love with me, so I'm going to manipulate you thing. There's no, of all the shitty things he does, he has not done that. And then
Alan, it's the drugs.
Yeah.
It's making him do it, Alan.
Yeah, here it's just like, boom, he's doing it, and boom, Ellie just fucking goes for it. Like, she loves him. Who's Jesse? What was all that about? Who the fuck knows? Right. Like, what? Yeah.
He lives in Danny Tanner's attic with Aunt Becky, so whatever, man.
That house just kept getting bigger and bigger on that show.
So, like,
say, Jake Epstein and Stacey Farber have really good acting chemistry. They went to school together before Degrassi. They were in the same, like, performing arts school together. So they knew each other before they were on the show. And honestly, I feel like if Craig wasn't such a bag of dicks and his character wasn't so bad and they could have had Craig and Ellie get together, they would have been really good together because they work really well together. But not as written, no, because there are some people who really like, I don't know why, Craig and Ellie together, even with all this shit, and I don't understand that because he's just the fucking worst, and Craig should never have a girlfriend, ever, ever, ever.
And it's just, like, the scene is, like, supposed to be heartbreaking, and I get it, like, especially for her. It's just, it hits out of nowhere, and it takes 30 seconds, and it's like, what the hell just happened?
And to your point, Alan, like, I feel like this season, these two-part episodes that they seem to hang on for this season for some reason, yes, are just becoming vehicles now to bring in an old cast member and take them away. Like, they kind of did it with Sean. We'll bring you for a two-part. It's supposed to be a big, hard-hitting episode, but they build up nothing to it. Same thing here. Like, this could have lasted over a few episodes, and they could have hit with this one near the end where you got to understand where he starts to become a bit of a dick to her. And you're right. Like, they just come in, bang, snort a line, I'm out.
And the worst part is that in a future episode now, Ellie's going to have to eat shit from Jesse over what she did in the relationship. Like, fuck off.
Right.
So she leaves the backstage area, and good old Craig bounces back to his one true love and gets after that little white angel.
Little nose candy.
Do it.
Then we quickly cut to Craig coming up to play his song. And instead of the one that he says he sings of theirs, he decides to sing an original.
Yes.
Right? It's not even the song that they heard him play. And what I noted is, like we talked about this before, like, it is a completely different vibe than the rest of what the show was just happening. Like,
oh, yeah.
Right? Like, this show was pure energy.
Like, all right, energy's high. Let's bring it way down for a minute.
For any of you that need to go to the washroom, we've got Craig Manning.
Let's listen to him tune his acoustic guitar.
No surprise, his nose starts to bleed, which was not a shocker, because of drugs, and then he runs off the stage unable to...
I mean, everyone in the audience is all whistling to each other, and they'll just like, pointing to the nose. Lots of cocaine, and it's like, okay, there's lots of reasons that people can have nosebleeds. Like, nope. People can have allergies.
Mm. Oh, there's not.
People
not
can just, like, have had them since they were little kids, like, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we are back to school, and we get a look at Toby, who is, I mentioned, pretty fucked up looking, but he's kind of loving it, because Manny and Emma are just waiting on him hand and foot, and we get our one an episode Manny call out to Toby Tobes.
Ugh.
To which I said, Toby's probably full chub right now.
He is completely blissful. Like, he's probably got, like, broken bones, and he's all fucked up. But he doesn't give a shit because he might get pussy from Emma and Manny, which he won't. But again, like...
They haven't talked to him in, like, years.
That's
fucking slang, and they're like, oh, Toby Tobes!
That kiss from Emma did more than all that cocaine Craig has done. Write that in there. JT comes up and apologizes. But Toby says, you know what? Yes, I look like I have just went a couple rounds with Mike Tyson. But maybe this is just what they wanted. Maybe they just wanted to beat somebody up, get out their aggression. Maybe everything will pass.
Not really true.
Nope.
JT says that he's going to get revenge, but then Toby quotes something wrong about violence only leading to the deepening of the dark. And he just kind of quits going on. He's like, I don't know what I'm talking about. And then gets the drugs. Basically, he gets him to promise to stop. And JT agrees to stop, and then I wrote, spoiler, it doesn't stop. Well, maybe it stops for JT, as his heart does, but...
Aww, come on, leave him alone.
No, but that's biology, that's what happens. When
you die. Nah, you're bullying him. what are you, from Lakehurst? Leave him alone. He did nothing to you.
Gonna give him a lot of leg hurt.
Oh, leg hurt!
Oh, that's why it auto-corrected to leg hurt. Leg hurt.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe his legs hurt.
Go on. Well, go Jimmy's on. This is hurt. Stupid.
Oh, dear.
So we get our last scene of the episode. We're at the airport again, but where are we again, Alan?
Union Station, Toronto. Train station, everybody.
Train station.
Yeah.
Train station. You know, he could have just been on a train, too. But anyway, Ellie says Ellie gives Craig his ticket to Calgary. And Joey says he leaves, I think it was 11 o'clock. He says, are you going to be here? Are you here to make sure basically babysit me and make sure I leave? She said, nope, that's Snake's job. For some reason, we got to get a Snake cameo, just to say.
There's,
you know, Joey's Snake buddy.
Is Snake like a surly bailiff? Like, he is everything. Why is he here?
There's a whole bunch of events that happened in this scene that I don't understand how we got there. So someone booked a plane ticket for Craig to go to Calgary that clearly wasn't Craig, because Ellie hands it to him. So,
and he doesn't know when he's getting on the plane, except he's already at the airport.
Yeah. So Ellie somehow is like involved in the acquisition of this plane ticket and handing it over to him. But also,
I think Ellie said that they were going to get Dairy Queen. and he tricked her. Then he just showed up at the airport.
So then there's this shit with Snake. So Craig had a nosebleed at this show. So are we led to believe that someone was like, Craig, you have to do something? And like did Ellie tell Joey? Then did Joey call Snake? And did Snake be like, I'm going to fucking come to the airport and make sure you get on that airplane, Craig?
That's what I assume.
That is the implication that I understood.
Snake is like, we're going to keep Toronto drug free. Get out of here, Craig. Back to Calgary or Vancouver.
And again, then what? Craig is all of a sudden now back to being just this little child who is controlled by Snake and Joey. If Craig wants to help himself, that's one thing. But like, to me, wouldn't it have made more sense if Craig was like, wow, like that was fucked up. I just blew the biggest opportunity in my life. I wrecked my friendship with one of my best friends and manipulated them. I need some fucking help. I need to go see Joey. Like, that would have made sense. But it feels like all these people have still forced Craig and he's still in denial of it. But he can't escape.
His record company is just like, this is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rockstar got a rockstar.
Yeah.
So Craig said he's happy that he's able to admit that he's, I guess, got a drug problem, but he's also happy that he also admitted to loving Ellie, because that part was true, to which I said, gross. That was just terrible.
Yeah, fuck you, man.
Again, like, putting it on her again. But
like minutes ago, he was just like, Manny, I'm crazy about you. You're amazing. Da, 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 da. Nope. In love with Ellie. Okay.
Yeah.
And he wrote love in cocaine the night before.
Uh-huh.
Well, Ellie's head turns into a big bag of drugs. And it's like, I love you. I love you, big bag of drugs. I mean, Stacey Farber. I mean, Ellie. He's all shagged up. Like. Yes.
But to Ellie's credit, she's having nothing of it. She says he just needs rehab. He mentions something about, okay, and when I come back, maybe you're there. And she says, fuck you, basically. Leave. She says goodbye. She turns and leaves. She's heartbroken. And then the screen cuts back and we just end on Craig's face, to where we get the acoustic up. Be the best.
With Snake the Enforcer standing behind him.
Yeah.
Arms crossed. Ooh, tough. Yeah. It's like Dog the Bounty Hunter, but Canadian edition. Ooh.
And I don't understand here, again, Craig's motivation. Like, earlier when he told her he loved her, he was trying to get out of the situation so he could get back to his precious cocaine.
Yeah.
Now he's busted, and yet he's still saying this to her. And it's like, so he's either still manipulating her, and I don't see his motivation to do this at this point, or he really feels that way, which again is like, how are we at this point? Like, because he doesn't love her. He's never loved her throughout all of this, and now he's like, it's,
or at least the way that she wants him to love him. Maybe he loves her as a friend, right? Like,
It's just crazy bipolar drug addict Craig. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. There we go.
All right. So, thoughts on this two-parter, or even on this episode? I guess. What are we thinking? Yay or nay?
I mean, to say that I didn't enjoy these episodes would be a lie. I did enjoy them.
Yeah.
They're just so, the whole thing is so manic, just like Craig.
Yes.
I'm glad
it really is. You're right. It really is that kind of a look. Maybe that was on purpose.
You don't want to give him too much credit.
No, I really don't. Like, again, I don't like that these two-parters are being used to, seems like, speed up time a little bit with what, the show originally was about. Kind of real life, how things transpire, how things build, things going on in the background, we're jumping into people's lives. Now it's more like, this is the bottle episode for this thing every single time a little bit now. And well,
we have a couple more two-parters coming up.
I know. I remember reading that this is what this is about.
This season
was about two-parters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like the way they're treating these two-parters. I just don't think it's in the sense of the show. But, I mean, hey, I didn't write it.
It's only like, I mean, this is obvious. It's cliche probably at this point. It's like, it's Degrassi. It's only in name, strictly in name. Right. It has nothing to do with it, because as somebody said, I believe to Waylon Jennings one time, they're like, you used to sing about like the common man, and because you were a common man, but then eventually you weren't a common man and you're a rich, you know, country star, and you started thinking about you and not other people. And it kind of like Degrassi kind of made that shift where it's like, I don't know, man. And maybe this happens to some people out there, but like pregnancy all over the place. Like you go, nah, like, I don't know, man. Like all these like drug issues and stuff, and drugs happen, but there was more things. There was more like basic things that you could have got into that people could relate to. Like, and they picked it up and dropped it, which I found kind of gross. Like, oh, so-and-so, Toby has a eating disorder. Oh, next episode, he doesn't anymore. And it's just like, oh, Emma also has an eating disorder. I think that was maybe a two-parter, so they at least gave her that.
Yeah. Also, she was having one in a real life and coming out of it when she was shooting those episodes, which was really good job by the writers and the producers for having that girl go through that.
Good job taking care of your actors.
Jesus.
So it's like, it was doing it just to touch on it, but it was like, no, it wasn't like that. Not to go, and I'm just going to end here, but like, life isn't like that. You don't need to do that. You can touch on stuff, and you don't need to wrap up everything with a neat bow, because life doesn't happen like that. Anyways, Ted, why are you so serious? <Ba-da-ba-ba-ba>.
No, but you're right. It feels, I mean, they're just trying to be like all the other 2000s teen dramas, especially at this point, going from 2006 into 2007. You know, the TV landscape was changing and you had to be a little more, I don't know, adult, I guess, even though you were writing about kids still. But it did feel like the show lost what made it good at some point. I don't know when that change started, but maybe like season four, maybe? I don't know. But I always joke that the Kevin Smith episodes were when they jumped the shark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it was like, of the shark.
It was very much like paint by numbers.
I haven't watched some of the later seasons, and I'm hoping that this one kind of comes out of this valley.
Honey,
Stacey warned us about this quite a while ago.
Here's the thing. they started out Next Generation with like kids who kind of looked like kids, you know, like they were like okay looking kids. They had clear skin, like all that stuff, a little bit different than like Degrassi Junior High, where not everyone had clear skin, at least.
Right.
But, you know, at least like the core four, like Manny, Emma, JT, and Toby, like they at least looked like scrawny little kids.
Yeah.
You know,
you'd
they didn't look like models.
You'd
and then, the you know, now we're in the, like, you know, they all grew up and ended up looking like models, and now they freaking hire people that look like models, like Nina Dobrev and everyone. Right. And I'm kind of hoping, like, those later seasons, maybe we get back to kids that look a little more realistic.
Nope.
Like, I know Claire and Eli look slightly more realistic. They're not quite as model-y.
You're going to be so disappointed.
You're just going to be
It's just crushing you for, like, the last...
Let me have some optimism here.
Hope springs eternal.
Yeah. I honestly, and I apologize in advance to Stacey, I blame the American network for what happened here.
Oh, no. I agree with you.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you.
I'm sure that they were like, just, we want you to pump out drama, please. Like, that's what we need. And
it's safe.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, and if it doesn't make sense or whatever, as long as it's entertaining. And I'll say this, like, our job on this podcast, the thing we in our 40s do for free every week is watch this like show and then like criticize all the nonsensical stuff. I'm sure they were like, who gives a fuck? Like, I'm still enjoying it. Like, I'm entertained.
Oh, yeah.
I'm entertained when I watch it, and I watched these all prior to this podcast and was like, okay, that doesn't make sense, but fuck it. Like, I can still binge watch a season of Degrassi and it works for me. But it's just when you think about it from a logical level, it's like, the fuck happened? And I just think they didn't care. They were like, pump out drama. Who cares?
Well, that's the thing.
Absolutely.
Degrassi, the Next Generation, was really popular in America because they would do like mall appearances and they would do appearances down here and people would go absolutely fucking ape shit. And when they were in Toronto, like they basically no one bothered them because like they went to regular high schools and they were like, you know what I mean? So it was an American thing. You can blame, what is it, the N, right? The N, Nickelodeon, they're the ones who screwed it up. So, yes, blame the Americans.
And I think you got a sense of that when you read the Mother of All Degrassi book you had, where she sort of starts hinting at like how they're getting a lot more say and they're just using the Canadian market to help get it to be produced for a certain way in a certain time.
I mean, in 2006, the Canadian dollar was like fucking 2/3 of the American dollar. They're probably like, produce some content. It'll be cheap. Like,
yeah. Okay. Well, what do we have coming next week? Well, we have episode 11, Rock This Town. When Emma tells Manny that her parents are out of town for the weekend, Manny decides to have a party at Emma's. Not her own house, but Emma's house. JT tells them that they should have it for Liberty's birthday. Okay, so they do. However, when everybody finds out about the party, Manny learns that it was a mistake. The students at Lakehurst come to the party, but start trouble and are thrown out. By the end of the night, someone will lose their life.
Dun, dun, dun!
Do you know what? I'm kind of looking forward to it. I hope it's a good one. I don't remember it, really. Optimism high on this one.
Well, I can tell you on YouTube, there is a video that's like behind the scenes on Degrassi that is like a DVD situation for season 6. And as part of that video, they do have a filmed moment of like the table read of the cast when they first find out what is going to happen in the next episode. So if you have time and interest, you can seek out that video. And you can see the reactions of the cast when they find out what happens.
All right. Yeah. So join us next week to find out what happens and who will lose their life. Is it you?
It's a mystery.
Is it Mr. Burns?
Are we going to kill you?
What?
All right, let's swing it around the horn one last time. We'll send it out to Pile of Bone, Saskatchewan.
Hey, Arlo, you can follow me on Instagram at ARLOESCOTT. Alan.
Hi, it's Alan, as Arlo just said. Slip with Five Eyes or Slip. And if you want to follow the podcast, at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram, fuck it, at Narbos Podcast on Twitter, narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, let's go to New York.
Oh, yes, that's me. Stacy here, srgots on Instagram, on TikTok, but don't look at my TikTok if you don't want Degrassi spoilers. And I am on Twitter, because I'm not calling it the other name, at StaceGots. And let's send it to, where are you again?
Newfoundland.
That's right, Newfoundland.
Let's roll that again. Newfoundland, how did you say it?
I'm not saying it again.
It's okay. It's all good. It's all
I'm
good.
American, okay?
No, it's okay. It's okay. You are our friend. So my name is Ted at SayWow3 on the Instagram machine. I suspect weekend, myself and Linda will go into the woods chasing birds and squirrels, her favorite. Second one being squirrels. She likes to chase those. So yeah. Yeah, there you go. And throw it back to whoever was, Tim?
By the way, Stacy, kind of unbelievable that you wouldn't know where Ted is from, seeing as there was an event that had an anniversary earlier this week, and there was a musical about how the people from Ted's province took care of the people from Gander. Your city. So,
that's right. Come from away.
From away. That was in that like was based in Gander, Newfoundland, because Gander, Newfoundland has an international airport, but also St. John's, which I just live outside of. Also is an international airport, but somehow like Gander is much more of an international airport. It's a very, very small community, but like a lot of flights fly over there internationally, and they all landed there. There was like 300 and something flights in this small-ish town, like in the thousands, like less than 10,000 for sure. And they housed them and stuff like that and brought them into their homes and things like that, which is like, I'm saying that as a Newfoundlander, I go, it's not that big of a deal. It's fine. because we kind of like, that's kind of what we do. Like, it's, yes, of course. Like, come on in. So
Americans wouldn't do that.
And who knows? There's maybe a little bit of that
they
too
should
going
make
well.
Make a musical about a bunch of fucking stranded Newfoundlanders landing at the Newark airport, and just that'd be a lot more interesting. A musical. Oh,
getting shot for knocking on the wrong door.
Oh, amazing.
So on.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I know where Ted's from. I just say it wrong, and I didn't want to say it.
Okay.
No, no, it's fine. It's no judgment here. This is a judgment-free zone. It's just Newfoundland.
Understand.
Hit the F card.
Newfoundland.
Newfoundland. Newfoundland.
Understand, it's Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
There you go.
Newfoundland, understand.
Yep.
Babo.
And I've been your host, Tim, at Folly underscore T, and I just want to give a shout-out to the lovely free streaming app Tubi. What a wonderful app that is, and the stuff
I love
can find
Tubi.
On that
is it
app.
Great? Yeah.
Free.
I've just been thumbing through another Canadian show, Edgemont, on that a little bit of here and there, just to remember that show. So, good. Thank you.
I've been
Tubi.
Watching original Iron Chef, and I love it.
Oh, I used to watch that at university. I love the Iron Chef.
So oh, is that the guy who comes out and's like,
"I
this is the challenge"? Yeah, great.
Well, I've been your host, and I hope you guys enjoyed our review of these lovely two episodes. So you enjoy. We'll see you in a week.
See you.
Bye.
Newfoundland, baby.
Well, I just said I don't get my ups. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kellen. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the cafe, just to get to my dreams.